I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Main title sequences are an art form that I have really grown to love. They are the short pieces that run right before your favorite show with the credits. The best ones, in my opinion, offer so much more than just a list of people who worked on the series. They also tell the story and serve as sort of an entree into the program you are about to watch. That is why I jumped on the chance to speak with Imaginary Forces creative director Grant Lau. He designed the kaleidoscope-like main titles for Starz's new puzzle box series, The Rook. Grant and I talk about how he became a creative director in the first place, how he conceived The Rook's opening titles, and what he thinks about the way audiences interact or don't with these beautiful sequences in the age of binge-watching. Here's my conversation with Grant. Hello, Grant. Welcome to the podcast.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
All right. Thank you so much for doing this. So let's start at the beginning, but let's talk a little bit about how you got to where you are, how you became a creative director. How does sort of one do that? And then how do you, I feel like being a creative director of main titles is like super dream job. So I always wonder how people get themselves there.
Honestly, I got there by, I guess, accident, maybe.
None of this by accident, but okay.
We'll go with that. Anyway, so it wasn't totally premeditated, but sort of. Let's say I was at school at the time, and I needed an internship. And basically, I threw myself at them, and and I knew I wanted to somehow get into the process of it. I didn't really know how I was going to, because I had a graphic design background, and I've never really did titles before. But it was something that I really loved. And so I think it was persistence. A lot of it was getting in there. And then I had a lot of other backgrounds before that. Like I had, you know, I started a clothing line. This was like in the 90s. So in the 90s, okay, we were pretty experimental in things that we tried to do. You know, we wanted to do clothing line. I had a hip hop publication, stuff like that. And then I went back to school at Art Center in Pasadena. And so that was kind of like my process of kind of unknowingly getting to where I am today with titles. Mm-hmm. And so basically I went to Imaginary Forces and I applied for internship. And at first they were saying I was overqualified. And what I tell people a lot of times is if you really want to get into a place, you kind of have to show them what you can do. I came in at the lowest end of the spectrum. So I told them I would intern for nominal fee, just so I can get in the door and kind of basically show them what I can do. And it's just through hard work.
So if you don't mind my asking, how old were you when you decided to go back to school for graphic design?
Oh, I was pretty late. This was my second time back at school. So I would say I was like in my late 20s.
So what made you decide to do that? And how did you do that without being totally freaked out?
Through the process of my education system back in the day, I didn't really have too many art background stuff. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was I got accepted to San Diego State University, which is a fun school. I met a lot of good people there. I mean, I would say it's hard to define like how you're going to get somewhere, but I'm appreciative of, you know, it might not have been the people that you meet in college, it transcends and it goes on. And it's basically, it's like, you know, what you do with that. Yeah, so when I went to San Diego State, of course, I went as a business major. I mean, you're young. You just want to figure out how I want to make money. So I took the business route because I figured that they were a good business school. I was failing my accounting class and I was like working really hard. You know, I went to after studies and it just never really clicked with me. It clicks now, but at that time, it didn't click with me. I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. I've been partying a lot. I need to figure this out. And so I realized that they had a graphics department there. And that was kind of like the time I was already doing graphics on the side. Like that's when Apple kind of sort of came out.
So then you did this at San Diego State.
I came to back to LA. I sold my company. And then I wanted to go back to school, Art Center. I grew up in Pasadena, so Art Center was a school that I really wanted to go to. I applied like maybe 3-4 times, but I never had a portfolio. Mm-hmm. So I finally was able to get by going to San Diego State, taking art classes, I was able to get a portfolio going. They accepted me, so I started doing graphic design there.
Okay. And then did you learn motion design there too, or did you learn that later?
Yes, it was actually by accident. Again, ad friend of mine said, "Hey, take an After Effects class. You know, you could do it." And I had extra units that I could use, so I took an After Effects class. I was like, "Holy crap! You can actually make things move." And that was the time when Kyle was doing. It was Kyle and David Carson. There and David Carson's graphic design, his like kind of grungy type, and then you had Seven came out. When Seven came out, it kind of had it, like, I was like, wow, that's so cool and organic and like visceral that I want to figure out how I can get there.
Okay, so then Imaginary Forces had done the main titles for Seven, so that made you say the place I want to work is Imaginary Forces. So I'm going to go and prostrate myself on their altar and say I will be an intern and work for free, basically, if you will have me. And that is how you got there. Wow. So and when was that? Because Seven was what, like late 90s?
Late 90s or early 90s, I think.
Okay, so you've been there for a while.
I've been there for over 22 years,
So you've been doing main titles then for a while?
Yes.
So we're going to talk about the road.
I'm not a newbie. I might seem like a newbie, but I'm not.
So we're going to talk about The Rook, which is the one you just did. But what are some of the other, what are other main titles that you've done?
I've done Bosch. That's like the latest one. So Runaways, Marvel Runaways. Me and Karen worked on that one. Me and Karen worked on Monster Calls.
And you do both movies and TV, correct?
Yes. They're both one and the same. Like, you know, we'll tackle both. I did I'm Dying Up Here, Showtime.
And then do you work a lot with Karen? Because I talked to her about the main title she did for Starz, Counterpart, and that one went on to win the Emmy for Outstanding Main Title Sequence. When you guys, I mean, you've probably both been there for a while. Do you find that you sort of bounce ideas off each other? Like, if you're doing The Rook or she's doing Counterpart, do you guys still sort of go, hey, what do you got going on here? You know, let's sort of look at this together.
Sometimes, if we have time or if we're stuck. Sometimes we get in our own little bubbles. I can always count on her, and she can always count on me to give her a honest opinion on things. So, yes, we do bounce stuff off each other. You know?
So then how did the conversation start with Starz about doing the main title for The Rook?
It was pretty organic. They were in a bind, and they came to us looking for a look for The Rook. They were under a time crunch, and they had something before, but they weren't sure of. More people got involved, and so they wanted us to see where else it could go.
Okay, so they already had a main title sequence, but they decided they didn't necessarily want to go with that one. So they came to
correct
you to see what else you could come up with. Without going too much into what they had before, but the idea that you came up with, which you guys can see on the website with this post that goes along with this podcast, but a lot of it is about this kaleidoscope look. Is that something that pre-existed what you did, or was that a new idea you brought to the table?
No, it was a new idea I brought to the table. They gave us parameters on like what they kind of wanted. They wanted a somewhat graphic approach to it.
Why did they want a graphic approach?
Well, they didn't want necessarily a graphic approach, but it had to be because of they wanted different aspects of it. They wanted it to have a sense of place, which is London. Mm-hmm. They also wanted it to have kind of a spy-ish idea background, and they also wanted it to have some sort of special supernatural feel.
Right, set into a supernatural world.
Correct. You know, there's like certain things that kind of happen that are unexplained.
Yeah.
So they want to there's a lot of things that, like, you know, you can't just do with just live action. They just wanted to see where else we can kind of push it. Me and the team kind of went back, and it ended up being a combination of two things, but it was, we kind of wanted to kind of create like her POV of her mind of like when she kind of woke up from that. Because we saw like a few of the episodes. And so I wanted to kind of pursue like her, what her mind was kind of going on.
Yeah, so let's back that up for 1 second. So the premise of the show is this character who I don't have in front of me. It's like Maslani or something, but that's not the name. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this character wakes up. She's doesn't really remember how she got there. And then she learns pretty quickly that she has to unravel the mystery of where she is and why she's there. And it's set, she's an agent for this sort of supernatural spy agency set in London in sort of a futuristic time frame, correct?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Okay. So, yeah. So she wakes up. So that's what I was wondering about the kaleidoscope stuff, is if that was sort of about like worlds colliding or perspectives colliding.
You know, it was more of her perspectives kind of being deformed or distorted.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to tell, like what she doesn't know who to trust. So I wanted to kind of create this kind of confusion.
Right.
You know, chaos, but done in a way that I guess that was visually pleasing.
Right. It's like cool and eye-catching. And
sure. Yes. And then trying to incorporate London into it as well. There's certain things that we had to kind of do. So we wanted to kind of mix it all in.
And then were you able to shoot? Did you go out and shoot any original footage, or did you mostly use footage that you already had? Because it looks like from the main titles that you didn't necessarily need new footage, but you know, obviously I don't know what you ended up having to get.
We had to shoot a few things. A lot of it was done in CG due to budgetary constraints. We couldn't go out and shoot photosonic stuff. A lot of stuff that, you know, we had to kind of create ourselves on top of using elements that they had already shot for the show,
right. Yeah.
But trying to do it in a way that is not like to make it feel like it was shot for it.
Right. You didn't want it to feel like, oh, I'm just using stock footage in this. You wanted it to feel like this is all an original creation. Or, I mean, but one thing you guys can see in this main title sequence is it looks like certain things are drawn from footage that existed, like maybe footage of London Bridge or of specific London skyscrapers. So some of the things, and then the part of it that's cool is the evolving of the kaleidoscope, or the way that the images essentially unfold and make themselves known to you and then fold into something else. So that's why I felt like you wouldn't necessarily need to do a lot of original shooting to do this sequence, but it would be a lot of CGI.
You know, and a lot of it was stills. We're able to get higher res stills for certain things and utilize that to tell our story as well. There was aspects of, like, you know, we did use stock, you know, initially for some
to
of
show
it,
the concept.
Right? As a concept, correct. And then you get the price of how much it is. So then we end up recreating some of that. So to make it look like that, because like, I'm not going to pay all that for that. We can just make it. So we ended up making a lot of that as well. You know, initially we'll start off with theme start, you know, we'll have a rough edit of it to tell the story. Mm-hmm. And then we go back in and recreate everything back into it.
Now, is there an effect that you can use, like in After Effects or whatever your post-production is, to create that kaleidoscope effect? Or is that really something
No.
that you're doing by hand? Yeah. That's too
bad. Yeah, we did that by hand. Yeah, it's not a plug-in.
Did you want to create a plug-in and you could sell it to people?
It kind of depends on the image itself, too. A lot of it was, we had to kind of create the different layers for it. It's hard to just, I don't know, maybe someone can. I haven't figured it out. And a lot of it is, I guess, visually looking at, I guess, architecture and lines and stuff like that. And so a lot of that has to do with that. Like using things in a certain way that kind of gives you these different lines. That's what we're kind of looking at it as, like kind of a different kind of single point perspective.
So I know very little about creating motion graphics, but is it hard then to sync everything up the way, because it seems like it all had to be synced up very precisely in the way the images are moving and evolving through the sequence?
I would like to say yes, but a lot of it is like they're happy accident. You know, you have a feeling for timing as you're going through the music and stuff. So, you know, as editorially, I think we'll go through and we would like kind of fuss with the time and kind of get things to sync up. And from there, hopefully we figured that out already through editorial. So then when the animators get it, they can kind of just go with that.
Oh, okay.
That
okay.
Sense?
So you're bringing animators to accomplish those concepts. So they're kind of doing it holistically.
Correct. So at first, me and editor or myself or whatever, or I'm editing or whatever, we're taking our music, because initially we started with different music too. This music was provided to us. We worked with the composer and he took it and redid it again. So there's a teamwork going on from that.
Can we talk about the music a little? Because the
sure.
First of all, the music itself to me was it's rhythmic. It's a little bit frenetic. You can definitely hear the different layers, but it also syncs up very nicely to the sequence. And you said, so you went back and forth with the composer. So did they end up having visuals that they could compose to?
Yes. The showrunners and stuff really already liked the music. They were set on the music. So we took their music and which had the same BPMs or the same mm-hmm. kind of somewhat rhythm. And we use that as cut, we cut it to that and we did the visuals to it. And then we handed it back in the middle of the process. So he got it pretty early. But he was amazing. We worked together with it, kind of like let him run with it because it was his.
Right.
So we wanted him to have his take on it. And we gave him we gave him somewhat ideas, like cues of like, oh, we would like this. Because at first, when we first got the music, it was 10 all the way through. And when you do titles, you kind of need this kind of crescendo kind of build up. That's why the beginning now is how it is. And then it kind of builds up to, to be, and because before it was pretty much the same, like as an energy. That was our contribution was to like, hey, can we break it up a little bit? Let's have it start a little slower. Let's build this thing up and then crescendo.
It starts a little slower and I think a little simpler, and then it builds both in like tempo and in complexity as it goes forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what we wanted. We wanted it to feel like we wanted to take the layers apart and like, okay, so we just want you to, but all the elements are there.
I mean, and that's the thing I think about main titles that's interesting is in a way, they're usually kind of symbolic, but in a way you're also telling a story about the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're trying to tell a story, within a story, and we're trying not to give anything away.
Right.
And then at the same time, if you get a chance to look at, that's why, I don't like it when you don't get to see the titles. I mean, I guess you could fast forward if you want, but there are little Easter eggs I try to throw in there. I like Easter eggs.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Easter eggs, because I felt like these seemed pretty chock full of Easter eggs. So like one that I noticed is there's a key and then the key leads to a mailbox, which that seems to be a clue. So what kinds of things like that did you throw in there?
Well, that's for one. I mean, that was the main part in the show. If you saw the first episode, she gets these two lockbox keys and she has to use them to get more clues.
And then are there other ones?
I almost don't want to. Because I think that's the beauty of it.
If you tell us,
they won't
be Easter eggs anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And and if you don't get them, then get them. But I think I want to leave it a little more mysterious. Because then I don't want to give away the show either.
Right.
They'll get upset. So I think a lot of those, we put in there and we want you to find them. Because otherwise, I mean, you found the key. You figured out the key one. And there's if you look at it, there's two different colors to the keys. But they're both mirrored. So if you look at the keys, one's blue, one's red, mm-hmm. but they're mirrored. So is that two different worlds, or
is it the Matrix? Same? Take the red key.
Red key or the blue key? Yes.
Right. Exactly. And I think it's interesting too, because I think the main title sort of, at least in this case for me, from the main titles I could gather, this is a mystery show, this is a puzzle box show, this is about probably at least changing perspectives or changing worlds. So in that sense, it's a tease. It's like a promo for the show, even though that's not really its main purpose, but it also serves that purpose of trying to lure in a viewer.
That's great. That's cool. That's really what we all wanted, because sometimes credits are, they can get kind of boring, I guess, if we don't, oh, there's my dog.
Hi.
Hi. Sometimes it can get a little, I guess, linear or too they can get a little linear and too single-sided. I'm really glad that your feedback was that, because that's what we're kind of looking at, to kind of give you that extra tease of like what is it, the mystery.
Well, okay, I'm going to say something, no shade, because I think these are Imaginary Forces titles too, but like the Stranger Things 3 titles are just the straight up Stranger Things, you know, words with the song, but they're not, they just don't. I mean, I love Stranger Things, but those titles to me like didn't do anything. I was like, I want a little more out of these. So
right, but I think to defend that one, right? That I think that was there's purity of that one for pure time period.
Yeah. It's like an 80s main title. Yeah.
It wasn't meant. It was never meant to be to tell you more.
That's a good point, because if you put like Mad Men main titles on it, like it wouldn't fit the feeling.
It wouldn't fit, you know. And if you start showing faces or characters and like all this other stuff, it just wasn't fit. I think the beauty of that one that Michelle Doherty did was that we're gonna embrace the time period. And we're going to find, the essence of that time period. And she found it great with the typeface. Because like me and Michelle, we used to talk a lot too. And like, we want to bring certain things back. Because like we're kind of older in our time. So there's things that we can kind of like, we want to bring the 90s back or bring the 80s back. And something kind of comes up that we can kind of do that to, we usually try to go for it. And it was just the perfect time for that. And she was able to kind of embrace the whole Stephen King, the essence of all the books and the, you know, and it was just that time period and the visceralness of how the type glue and stuff. And so to defend that, I think that's why I think people liked it. You know what I mean?
It's appropriate to the piece.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we try to do. It's like, you know, each piece is its own. It's its own entity. You know, when you do these things, it's kind of like it's where you are in space and time. You're not going to hit everything. It's creative. Everything's subjective. Someone's pink is a different person's pink.
Going back to making decisions about The Rook or doing other main titles, what is it that you specifically, this is actually sort of like a one-on-one question, like what is your job? But as a creative director, what does that mean that your job actually is as you're putting together these sequences?
I guess it runs the gamut. It's me thinking of the creative, what we want. It's me figuring out the team, who I can get to help. Mm-hmm. It's figuring out budgetary constraints. There's no budget for it. I can't come up with something that they can't afford. You know, like, it can't just be so arrogant and like,
can't fly
I'm going to
get in and shoot everything.
Oh, yeah,
on drones.
Exactly. Yeah. Or I'm going to get a helicopter. And we're going to, you know, like, but with Bosch, you know, when I did Bosch, the funny thing with that one was we had a meeting with the client, and I overheard them talking about they still had all this helicopter shooting to do in Los Angeles. So I'm like, you know, so
I'm
a lot
in
of
on
it
that.
Is like, exactly. I've never flown in a helicopter. How am I going to get on the helicopter? So I came back into the office, and there was no budget in this. So I just came back and I scoured all the helicopter footage I could find of Los Angeles. And I put it together and I made a little demo or a rough cut, right?
Mm-hmm. Animatic. What you're trying to get,
Exactly, what I wanted to achieve with that. And so that's kind of how I got that. So a lot of it's like listening to the client as well. You have to listen to the client and see what they have and what's available to you from there, you know?
So on this one, I mean, you obviously they gave you something and then you watched episodes and you gave them something back. But in terms of listening to stars on this, what kinds of things were you kind of mentioned it before, what kinds of things were you like, I heard this from you, stars, so I made sure to incorporate it.
Actually, stars was pretty hands off. They wanted to make sure that there's certain elements in there that we were able to hit. Like, you know, they wanted the location and they wanted it to have mystery to it. They wanted a sense of like
confusion or chaos or perspective.
Well, no, they didn't even say that. They
supernatural.
Supernatural. That's what, because there was already a book with this. And so they wanted to make sure that we hit on, I know, there's a big thing of it was that there's a lot of different characters in it, and they wanted us to kind of touch on all the characters. And that was the main thing, probably from stars.
Now, did you feel like you did that? Because it's interesting, in my watching of it, I didn't feel like it was very character heavy at all. There is some, you know, silhouettes of people. There's a little bit, but it's pretty limited in terms of what you're presenting with character.
That's on purpose. I, you know, didn't want to blatantly, but if you look, if you watch the show, you would know who those silhouettes are. So one of them, one of the characters would be the king, and then you also have the queen. You know?
Yeah, because it's kind of based on chess, right? The rook, right? So that's about
the rook. Yes,
it's all about chess.
Exactly.
And the
exactly.
agency is called like Chechny or Chechny or
Chesney. Exactly.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of whole thing going on.
I didn't want to go down the whole like
chessboard route, which is like right where I went just now.
Yeah, the chessboard, and because it's already there, and mm-hmm. it was just kind of obvious on that route. And
yeah.
So, you know, I kind of wanted to take a more, like, I guess, abstract look at it. And again, those are the Easter eggs. So that if you see the guy holding, but you don't see his face, but you know it's an African-American guy. And so you know that, you know, he's part of the character
right,
in the show.
Right. I think that's cool, though, because I think that adds to that mystery puzzle box Easter egg thing that you're trying to accomplish. And I think you're right. If you went the chess imagery route, which we've all seen, it would be way too on the nose.
Oh, trust me, I did that. Like, if you look at our old, if you look at our boards, like, you know, you kind of have to go through and the kind of, and what I call learned it from school was, you know, this kind of this vomiting stage. You know, you have to put all your ideas, good or bad, down to realize what's good and bad. And again, you know, you're dealing with also like clients that might specifically want certain things. And so, you know, so we had to kind of, and they never said they wanted the chess route or anything or didn't want it. We all knew it was there. We definitely ran that route. And I think there's certain elements of it there, but it's more abstract.
Yeah.
That it's chess. There's duality and there's like, you have to kind of look.
No, but I think it's good because it's another part of the piece where you're like, this is worth watching a few times to figure out what's in here and what's packed in here and what's going on. You know, it's not one
right.
where you watch it once and you're like, okay, cool, let's start the show. Like this one, you sit and spend a little time thinking about.
It's sort of like, did you ever watch The Wire?
Yes, of course.
Of course, right? Okay, so you know how that, you know how every season they had a kind of a different intro. And I guess it's kind of like Game of Thrones too. But they had the luxury of like actually being able to do a new one for each episode, which is pretty awesome.
There's a new one for each season, I think, right? For The Wire, because each season has a different setting.
Exactly. Yeah. But when you like the first time you watched it, you just kind of watched it. Nothing really clicked with you until maybe the third episode.
And you started realizing, I need to pay attention to these because something's going on.
Or like you start to go, oh, that's why he has that image there.
Yeah.
Because of this. Those are the kind of, that's why I kind of like don't like when you push forward the titles, because maybe the creative director had an intent of like trying to like give you hints of it throughout that you should be watching. So
I feel like The Wire was kind of the start of this age of television, like The Wire, Sopranos, those shows, but it was also the start of this age of main titles where I don't think before that you'd probably spend that much time talking about main titles. Like they were just credits in a song.
Yeah.
And now there's a whole separate thing going on with main titles a lot of times.
There's a whole website dedicated to
the art of the title.
Main titles.
Yeah. No, main titles are amazing. They're one of my favorite things. I just think they're cool.
Yeah, I enjoy them because they're short. I mean, and they're getting shorter. But it tests, as a designer and creative, it tests your ability to like tell something in a creative way in a short amount of time. You know,
which are two very challenging things. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have the luxury of like having 50 minutes to tell you the story, which I would love to get into someday, but like right now, like, you know, that like trying to get all that impacted and without feeling oversaturated, you know, of information and what to give you and what not to give you is what I get a kick out of.
So when you watch Netflix and you get the skip intro button, does it like break your heart?
Yeah, I kind of breaks my heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I've done it because
you've seen it.
You know, it just depends on what the titles are, right? There's certain, I mean, I honestly, like Stranger Things, I did because I was trying to get through it. And I've already known,
and
I felt bad for doing it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, there's certain ones that you can, I feel that I get it. So people are going to miss out on a lot of things too, doing it the other way. You know?
I mean, I will say, I mean, with HBO, you cannot skip the main titles, but you could, the Game of Thrones we watch on our DVR, and I watch the main titles every time just because I was like, I want to see if anything changed. So I always watch them.
Yeah, and again, it preps you for the show. But then, you know, we live in a different age now where it's like we can get the whole season in one sitting.
Right. So you don't need to watch it every single time. You're not, which, you know, the watching everything, like I just also binge watched Stranger Things over the weekend. So it's really fresh in my mind. But right. Like when you're watching eight in a row, you're like, I don't need to see this main title sequence again. I just watched it. But that said,
right.
I feel like that's one of the things we lose by binging is what we got with Game of Thrones, which is every week I'm sitting down, I'm watching the whole thing, I'm watching the main titles, and then I'm talking about that episode for the whole week. And that's a whole experience you get to enjoy now. So I just watch eight episodes of Stranger Things in, you know, 2 or 3 days. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you don't get that same experience of getting to enjoy each episode fresh and anticipate that episode. And I don't know. So I think there's like a pro and con to this age of binging in that way.
Yeah. Old school, new school. You know what I mean? And, and attention span, it gets shorter and shorter with everyone. Yeah. There's certain things, I'm so appreciative of HBO for not and keeping that true. You know what I mean? Making us watch it. Sometimes I hate it. Sometimes, like, you know, I just want to sit down and go through the whole thing. But then there's an appreciation for it.
You can wait till the whole season's over and then just binge it.
Yeah, but then people talk about it during the week. It's like, I can't let that happen because then
that's
blow
true.
It. Right?
That's true. I did not get spoiled on Stranger Things. I was very proud of myself.
That's good. But I've been watching The Boys lately, that one too.
Amazon. Yes, I want to see
Amazon.
That.
But I haven't been watching. I mean, I could binge watch that, but I haven't. So I'm kind of just chilling. So I'm like not trying to like watch that much TV and try to do other things. So, yeah.
What?
Purpose.
Do other
purpose.
Things.
Yeah, like go outside.
That seems crazy. People I don't know what outside. You're talking about.
I know. But people should go outside. There's like, you know, there's grass and there's like wind and
sunshine
and the sun and sunshine, you know.
Yeah, well, you know. All right. I think that will cover us. Thank you so much, Grant. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
And I'll talk to you again soon. And congratulations on the great main titles.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And I love talking to you. And anytime you want to talk again, I'm here.
All right. Awesome. All right. Thank you. Talk to you again.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Paige Alpiniak is editorial director at Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, edited this podcast. Video Helper provides the music. Digital content producer Kayla Marie Hardaway contributes to Daily Brief. Promax is rebranded to just Promax, so you can find us on Promax Global on Facebook and Promax_Global on Twitter and Instagram. You can also always reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.